At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Congratulations, everybody. You have finally done it. You've gotten the savings rate up to something respectable. Your timing kind of stinks, though. Numbers out today show Americans are as frugal as they've been in a good long while, which is a problem if you're trying to kickstart an economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Batten Institute, advancing knowledge about entrepreneurship and innovation at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, www.batteninstitute.org. And by Super Brands, Brand Week's annual ranking and analysis of America's top 2,000 brands. You can Google Brand Week Super Brands for more information.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is Friday, the 26th of June. Glad you could be here with us. The federal government can and has flooded this economy with stimulus money. But try as it might, it just can't make a spend. We learned from the Commerce Department today that that $787 billion stimulus bill has had at least one desired effect, a 1.5% jump in personal incomes last month, which is great. But it didn't really stimulate many of us to go out and buy. It seems we replenished our shrunken nest eggs instead. Americans stuck money under their mattresses at the highest rate in more than 15 years. But if consumers are being tight-fisted, and if banks still aren't lending as much as they used to, how then to get money out into the economy? Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
You go first. No, you go first. An economic recovery has to start somewhere, but that's the face-off that's developed between consumers and banks. Given today's word that a lot of us are putting our money away right along with the banks, TD Bank chief economist Joel Neroff says we're in for a long, slow recovery. But he says the extra cash in the pockets of consumers could be just what's needed to change attitudes.
Consumers and businesses have assumed what I call the turtle position, where basically they just pulled themselves into their shells and didn't want to do anything. Slowly but steadily, confidence is rising, and they're starting to go back in.
UCLA economics professor Ed Lehmer says the government has done what it can to kindle a recovery, and now just needs to stay positive.
We don't need to be frightened into saving more. We need to slowly improve our savings rates. So a leadership that evidences understanding about what the problems are and a confident and clear statement of what the solutions are will make us all feel better about the future, and then we can return to more sensible spending.
But Harry Dent isn't so sure. He's an economist who focuses on demographics and says it makes sense Americans are saving more.
This baby boom switch from spend to save is just too big a tide for the government to counter. And in fact, I mean, what's the big thing? It's natural for people to save in their 50s and early 60s.
For Dent, that leads to the same familiar conclusion. He says it still means a long, slow recovery. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Alan Greenspan may not be the chairman of the Federal Reserve anymore, but he sure can make news when he wants to. In a column in the Financial Times newspaper today, the former Fed chairman warned inflation could threaten any economic recovery that's out there. That at a time when consumer prices are rising at a rate of about 0.1% a month, which is to say they're not really rising at all. But Greenspan isn't the only one waving the inflation flag, so we asked Marketplace's Amy Scott to find out how worried the rest of us ought to be.
So should we be worried about inflation?
I think we should be so lucky.
Barry Bosworth is an economist at the Brookings Institution. He says we'd be lucky because rising prices are usually a byproduct of a growing economy. But with unemployment marching toward 10% and the overall economy still shrinking, Bosworth says we're not there yet.
If we could just return to an economy where everybody had jobs and we were worried about inflation, we know how to deal with inflation.
The Fed can fight inflation by raising interest rates. But Bosworth says, if anything, deflation is still a concern. That is, falling prices. Of course, not all prices are flat or falling, as anyone traveling this summer knows. Carrie Leahy is an economist with consulting firm Decision Economics. He says recovering demand is pushing up the price of oil and other commodities.
Even though most prices in the aggregate are weak, the fact that energy prices have moved up so much will probably push the overall inflation rate, which had been negative, meaning less than zero. It'll probably turn positive in the next 3 to 6 months.
Another factor could push inflation into dangerous territory down the road. To avert an economic crisis, the Fed has been flooding the economy with money. When too much money chases too few goods, producers can charge more. Leahy says that could even lead to hyperinflation of as much as 8 to 10%. But he says the Fed would step in long before that happened. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
We probably should have expected this after the passing of Michael Jackson, but the vice president for music at Amazon.com said this morning that within minutes of the news breaking yesterday afternoon, they were sold out of everything they had by Michael and by the Jackson 5. Clearly, the singer's death has left his fans distraught, but it has also created a big financial headache for the concert promoter AEG Live. AEG is the one that had been organizing Jackson's comeback concerts in London this summer, and they were expecting to bring in more than $100 million. Now, though, the promoters and the O2 Arena, where Jackson was set to hold those 50 concerts, could be facing multi-million dollar losses instead. From London Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Earlier this year, Michael Jackson unveiled his plans for a marathon series of concerts in London, a comeback and a farewell tour combined.
This is it. I mean, this is really it. This is the final curtain call.
50 shows at the O2 Arena throughout the summer and winter starting next month. It would have been the most lucrative and longest series of concerts in a single venue. Now, says Mark Sutherland of Billboard magazine, the O2 has to come up with something else to fill the bill.
They've got 50 nights, which they did have, you know, not just booked, but sold out. And now they've got to certainly look at filling some of those nights, because that's a lot of nights to take out of your schedule.
The American promoter AEG Live has a bigger problem, $85 million in ticket refunds, and then there are the millions they've already spent on what would have been a lavish production. Dave Brooks writes for Venues Today.
They're contractually obligated with dozens of subcontractors who do lighting, sound, dancers. You assume all those folks still need to be paid.
By some estimates, AEG may have already spent $30 million. The company isn't commenting. It has said in the past the Jackson tour was insured. But Mark Sutherland says that's not the real question.
It's whether they have the insurance in place to cover every eventuality, including this one. That's probably the question that's troubling them at the moment.
Whether the insurers pay up may depend on the precise cause of the singer's sudden death. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Things were a little choppy on Wall Street. Today we'll have the details when we do the numbers. Oil was down just a bit today, closed a hair under $70 a barrel. The big news in crude isn't out of the trading pits in New York, though. On Monday, Iraq is going to start auctioning off new contracts for its oil fields. It'll be the first time in decades that Iraqi crude will be available to international companies. With the world's third largest proven reserves, Iraq stands to soak up a fortune, but there are some downsides, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains.
Security is one risk. Violence is still a fact of life in Iraq. And the terms of the deal aren't great. Foreign oil companies would be given 20-year service contracts. That would mean a set amount of money for specific work rather than a percentage of the oil produced. Many observers say oil companies may sacrifice short-term profits for the chance to get a foot in the door, hoping to negotiate a better deal down the road. For access to its oil, Iraq also wants firms to pay more than $2 billion up front as a kind of loan. Alan Good is an oil analyst with Morningstar.
It will take a lot of money to develop these fields and get them up to production. So I'm truly looking for these Western oil companies to come in with their large balance sheets and start to spend some money in the country and invest. It's certainly a way for the Iraqis to leverage the oil they have in the ground now.
There is risk for the Iraqi government. The public might view any deal as giving away the country's most valuable resource for too little in return. Michael Lynch with the consulting firm Strategic Energy and Economic Research says political instability is also a danger for the companies.
You always run the risk that the opposition says, aha, they're doing a bad job, look at these horrible oil contracts, and the government gets tossed out of office and the new government refuses to repay the loans on the grounds that they were unfair.
If production does go smoothly, there could be an upside for consumers. More petroleum on the market could result in lower prices for a barrel of oil. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
For all his time in front of the cameras with that Tuesday press conference he had, President Obama wasn't really the business and economic story of the week. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke was the newsmaker. The Fed met on interest rates Tuesday and Wednesday, and Mr. Bernanke had an uncomfortable morning on Capitol Hill yesterday, denying he forced Bank of America to buy Merrill Lynch. Joining us for our weekly wrap of Wall Street and Beyond are Felix Salmon from Reuters and Lee Gallagher as well. She's an editor at Fortune Magazine. Good to talk to you both again.
Good to be here, Kai.
Good to talk to you, Kai.
So without rehashing the whole thing, I want to touch on the Fed chairman up on Capitol Hill yesterday talking about Bank of America and whether he strong-armed Ken Lewis or didn't. And Felix, I want your take on what his treatment in front of Congress says about whether or not Bernanke ought to be the Uber regulator of all Uber regulators as the president wants to make him.
I think that the Fed should be the Uber regulator of all Uber regulators. It makes all the sense in the world for that power to be in the Fed. It makes no sense at all for that power to be anywhere else. And so then the next question is, should Bernanke be the head of the Fed? And that is a question which is looking a little bit more dubious these days just because he clearly doesn't have support on Capitol Hill. Now, right. He does have support, a reasonable amount of support on Wall Street and within the White House, so maybe that doesn't matter so much. But when Congress is so opposed to everything that he stands for, it's hard to make the claim that he really has the support of the people.
Lee, let me get your thoughts on that. Congressional viewpoints on Bernanke actually mattering in whether or not this all happens and whether he, you know, remains in the job.
Well, it's interesting. It's all becoming way more partisan than the Fed's position usually is. I mean, Republicans, of course, are, you know, they're against him because they're against Obama's new regulatory structure in general, which gives him more power and which, it should be said, he wants even more power than that. I mean, Bernanke, you know, he doesn't agree with this Consumer Financial Protection Agency. He wants that role as well. Doesn't mean that he shouldn't be in this role. I mean, he knows more about the Great Depression and about crises like this than anyone else. So there's a lot to be said for what he's done.
You know, Felix, I was on the InTrade site earlier today, you know, that website where you can place bets in the market and get the odds, right? And I think it's running like 70% that everybody thinks Bernanke is going to keep his job. What's your take?
They're right, because the fact is that the Republicans, for all that they love to rail and shout and oppose anything that the current administration is doing, don't actually want him to be replaced. Because if he's replaced, he's going to be replaced by Larry Summers. And if you're a Republican, Larry Summers is in every single conceivable respect worse than Bernanke. So who else, you know, could they choose?
Now, this is funny, because as we were talking, I went to InTrade again, and it's down to 61%. Lee, what do you think?
I don't think that he is going to get replaced. Another point to make is just that this is really not a great time to be pulling him out and putting someone else in. We're still far from recovery, as you know, the recent move this week suggests. So,
well, let's explain that recent move. They did not change interest rates when they wrapped up their meeting on Wednesday. They didn't announce any new loan policies, any of that stuff. What does that say, Lee, economically about where we are?
Well, I think it says that the economy may be perking up a little bit, but we're still deep in the weeds. And, you know, housing prices, we're still far from a bottom there. We're still a long way from recovery. And here we are in the second half of the year, which was when many people said, oh, everything will be better by this time. So I think reality's starting to set in a little bit.
Felix, what about that? The fact that everybody a year ago said, oh, it'd be better by, gee, right about now. And now they're saying, oh, you know, maybe next year. I mean, it's a goal that keeps getting farther away the closer we get.
There are actually economists who believe that the economy is growing right now. It's conceivable that when the end of the recession finally gets dated, it will be dated to around now. Now, personally, I'm
all right, saying that I'm actually going to put you on the spot. No, you don't think it's going to be dated to now?
I don't think so. No, I think there's a lot more shoes to drop. I mean, you are living in California, which is seeing its creditworthiness deteriorate by the day.
It's everything dropping, yeah.
There's a lot of Eastern European sovereigns who are looking extremely dubious. There's so much bad debt being buried on insurance companies' balance sheets, on European bank balance sheets, and is never going to be worth what the financial system needs it to be worth in order for the financial system to be solvent. There's a huge amount of denial in the market, and that people just haven't embraced how bad it really is.
Lee Gallagher at Fortune Magazine, Felix Salmon at Reuters. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers, Kai.
Coming up, board games bring people together.
We are lonelier and lonelier, more and more fragmented. So we'll do anything to meet people. So we use the internet to find people to play Monopoly with.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials lost 0.4% today. 34 points closed at 8,438. The NASDAQ ticked up 0.4%, 8 points, finished at 1838. That's a lot of 8s. The S&P 500 closed down at 10%, just 1 point, landed at 918. There's another 8. For the week, the Dow lost 0.1%. The NASDAQ gained 0.6. The S&P 500 fell 0.3%. Palm led tech stocks higher after it reported strong demand for its new phone, the Pre. The company tapped up 15% today. Competitor RIM, that's Research in Motion, mixed the BlackBerry, rose 0.1%. Apple jumped 0.8% as well. Microsoft fell 0.75%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.5%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. Produce more, conservemore.com. Miss anything in business news this week? Download our new podcast, After the Bell. Every Friday, Scott Jagow makes sense of the week in business and the economy. Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link. Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday, June 29th. In Washington, President Obama meets with Colombian President Alvaro Uribe at the White House. How many years will 71-year-old Bernie Madoff spend behind bars? Sentencing is scheduled in Manhattan. And a boon for car culture, President Eisenhower signed the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956, funding the construction of thousands of miles of roadway. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. There was some economic acceleration in and around Motor City today. General Electric is going to build a brand spanking new research center in the suburbs of Detroit. It's going to work on software for renewable energy and jet engines and gas turbines and that kind of thing. But more to the point, it means 1,100 new jobs in a state that's lost well over 100,000 of them in the past year alone. Also, General Motors has decided to build its new subcompact, the Chevy Spark, in Oregon, Michigan. But from the Marketplace desk of No Free Lunch, there is a lot of money being laid on to grease the wheels of these big corporate decisions. Mitchell Hartman reports now on the creative use of tax incentives.
GE will get $60 million in state and local tax breaks over 12 years, fully 60% of what it'll invest in the facility. In GM's case, three states fought over the company's new car plant. Greg LeRoy is director of the policy group Good Jobs First. He says states are bending over backward these days, especially in the stricken Rust Belt.
The incentives have sort of taken on a logic of their own. It's like there's never a bad day for a tax break.
But it's not just tax breaks that are attracting those rare companies that are actually expanding these days. Management consultant Ron Hollyfield helps local governments evaluate how to lure companies in.
Much more significant is the quality of life in the community, the quality of schools, the quality of governance, medical facilities.
And whether skilled labor is abundant and affordable to the employer. Hollyfield says state and local governments need to be careful when opening up the community chest to companies looking to relocate.
What do you do to recover incentives when a company does not live up to its obligations? If a decision is being made purely on an incentive basis, it may not be viable and may not last in the long term anyway.
GE is moving into the little town of Van Buren, 40 miles from Detroit. Town Supervisor Paul White says he's not worried about any of those issues right now.
We are looking primarily at the jobs, and in Michigan today, it's all about the jobs. We need jobs.
Which is something GE and GM still have to dole out for a price. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
I don't know why I remember this, but I do. The monthly payment on my student loans was $92.42 a month. Not all that much money in the grand scheme of things, and not much at all these days when tuition is so much more expensive and student debt loads are so much higher. The student loan industry, though, is adapting to the times. We've got Tess Vigeland, the host of our personal finance program, Marketplace Money, with us to explain. Hey, Tess.
Hello, Guy.
Student loans, changes a-coming.
They are, and I have a pop quiz for you.
I hate it when you do that. All right, what?
How many people have student loan debt?
A million.
Not quite, but 2/3 of all college graduates last year left school with student loans.
Wow. All right, and how much do they owe, though?
On average, $23,000. And that's just for undergrads. If you are a graduate student, it's another $18,000.
And these are kids who are graduating into an economy with no jobs,
right.
No nothing. Is there a plan to help them in any way?
You know, back in 2007, Congress passed the College Cost Reduction Act. And as part of that, every year, interest rates go down on July 1st. For example, if you've got a subsidized Stafford loan, the rate is dropping. If your old variable rate loans are still out there and you haven't consolidated yet, it's actually pretty good news because this year you can get them down to about 2.5%, which is an extraordinary rate for a student loan.
What about everybody else out there who's carrying debt?
Yeah, you know, new students will get a break this year, down from 6% to about 5.5%. And again, this is on certain subsidized loans, not private loans. Private loans are not subject to any of this. And people who are under the poverty line or who owe in student loans at least as much or more than what they are making in a gross income, they are eligible for a new income-based repayment plan. It's all very complicated, but we've got some links on the website to help folks figure it out.
Which is, of course, marketplace.org. You try to get money for anything, obviously, lots of paperwork. There are some changes, I understand, to the form, to the financial aid form.
Yeah, you know, Kai, anyone who's ever filled out the application for financial aid knows
raise your hand.
It is,
that was me,
unwieldy. I think that's a charitable word for it. So this week, the Department of Ed announced a big streamlining effort. The form is actually going to get physically shorter if you get the paper version. Online, it's going to get significantly shorter as well. There used to be more than 100 questions. They're cutting out a whole bunch of them. And if you do it online, they're going to link you to the IRS so you can automatically import a lot of the information that they ask you for. So it should become a lot easier, which is good because there are studies that show students actually don't apply for financial aid because the form is so onerous.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Give me some sense of the student loan environment out there in this credit crisis a year and a half on. Is there money to be had to go to school with?
There actually is, more than you've kind of heard over the last year.
Yeah.
But a big part of the problem with the student loans was the private ones. Because of the credit crunch, a lot of banks basically shut down their lending. Now, of course, the Obama administration is talking about making it so that private loans no longer get federal subsidies. So almost an effort really to get rid of the private loans. But on the government side, there are student loans to be had. You just have to do the research.
Tess Vigeland, she hosts our personal finance program, Marketplace Money. Tess, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Guy.
release of the new Transformers movie this week is just the latest offering of Hasbro products up on the big screen. We're also in line for movies based on some of the company's most popular board games, too. Monopoly and Candyland, coming soon to a theater near you. That's a testimony to the enduring popularity of certain games. Also, our fascination with all things retro. You throw in a bad economy, and you got yourself a business model. Gigi Duban reports now from Birmingham, Alabama.
It's 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. Over 1,000 people are packed into the ballroom of a downtown hotel. There's food, a cash bar. Old school hip-hop blares from the sound system. And the people here are looking for trouble. Trouble the board game. Remember that one? It's all part of a monthly event recently launched in Birmingham. Here's the deal. You pay $10 to go to a place where there's a huge spread of games. Everything from Connect Four to Rock'em Sock'em Robots. And people just play. 38-year-old Tara Tuck brought a few girlfriends along. They're playing Operation.
I wasn't ever able to conquer it. But tonight, as you can see, I have three of his body parts.
Tuck's no doctor, but she is an administrator with the Alabama Department of Public Health. She says as a state employee, she didn't get a raise this year.
This makes you forget about anything that's going on economically.
And that's kind of the point. This event in Birmingham was organized by a company called Playdate. Its goal is to provide an inexpensive alternative to the bar and club scene. The company started in Atlanta 5 years ago. Today, there are playdates in 20 cities. Ricky White ran this event.
You can have a Xbox 360, HD, Elite, blah, 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 blah. But you break out a pack of Uno, and the response far trumps the Xbox 360.
Playdate may offer old-school games, but its marketing strategy is typical of the digital age. It advertises online with banner ads, and it has a fan page on Facebook. Author Andrew Keene says it makes perfect sense that a business would use online sites to promote face-to-face interaction. He wrote a book on how the internet is killing our culture.
We are lonelier and lonelier, more and more fragmented. So we'll do anything to meet people. So we use the internet to find people to play Monopoly with.
And perhaps to find that special someone. About a half dozen people were swaying and head-bobbing around a skyscraper of wood blocks for a round of Jenga. George Cora was among them. Cora read about Playdate on Facebook. After sidling up to various women in the Jenga circle, he ultimately landed here, at the Pac-Man game. Cora remained hopeful, though. After all, the party wouldn't end until 2 a.m.
The good part is there's a lot of singles coming in. I'm going to meet as many people as I can until I find the right one.
It's like going to a house party, Cora says. All that's missing is spin the bottle. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering absolute return funds with goals designed to match yours. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note today, Warren Buffett isn't worth what he used to be, and neither apparently is a lunch date with a billionaire investor. For 10 years now, Buffett has auctioned himself off to the highest bidder, with proceeds going to the Glide Foundation. That's a nonprofit in San Francisco. Last time around, a guy from Hong Kong paid $2.1 million for the privilege of breaking bread with Mr. Buffett. Bidding for this year's event is markedly lower. As of this afternoon, a mere $475,000 on eBay. That'll probably go up some, though, as those eBay auctions do when the deadline gets closer. It's 10 o'clock tonight, in case you want to bid. Anyway, that's Marketplace from American Public Media this Friday afternoon. Today, the Dow dropped 34 points, 0.4%. The Nasdaq rose 8 points, 0.5%. The S&P 500 lost just 0.1%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste West, and the executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, when there are no banks in the neighborhood, where does the money go? Why, into the cookie jar, of course.
I taped the lid to it, and I made a hole on the top, and I was putting money into it.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.